Well, good morning. Welcome to Austin Bible Church. We're delighted to have you with us today. It's a special day. We have some friends in town from quite a distance. I didn't measure. How far is it to Liberia?
It's 6,000 miles.
6,000 miles. Well, that's not too bad. We just sang three hymns of following, so maybe folks will follow you when you go back. And Dan and Pat Hill are with us today, and it is a blessing. I learned Dan Hill was ordained in the same year I got saved. 1973. And so you were not 4 years old, though, at that time. That was Dan was ordained in 1973, attended Dallas Seminary, pastored in Prescott, Arizona, and in Tulsa, Oklahoma, most recently, 20 years in Tulsa, Oklahoma, at what is now Southwood Bible Church, formerly Petrean. And many of us, of course, the Carnegies and others with Petrean connections in Tulsa. But then came a voice. And came a call. And Dan and Pat decided that obedience to the plan of God was more important than what we want to do. And leaving Tulsa, Oklahoma, in a stateside domestic pastorate for missionary work in Liberia. So, in any event, you departed in 2010 for Liberia. Oh, 3 years now coming up. That's the same year we built this building. We will always remember 2010. We dedicated this building in 2010, and they went to Liberia in 2010. So that's how we can recall that. All right. I've given him the entirety of this message. So Dan and Pat, bring the word.
Thank you, Bob. It's really great being here at Austin Bible Church. And this is one of the churches that we pray for about every week as we are there in Liberia. And as Bob, I think, that was a great introduction. Thank you, by the way. That was really good. We were pastoring in Tulsa, Oklahoma, 20 years there. I love Southwood Bible Church. Oh, it was such a great church, such a great legacy to be only the second pastor of that church, following in the steps of Glenn Carnegie and the wonderful work that he established there and that he did there. And I thought basically I was going to just retire there. I was going to be there forever, become pastor emeritus. That was kind of my goal. You know, and kind of didn't be able to come in and teach whenever I wanted to and have somebody else much younger, you know, kind of take over the day-by-day drudgery of the ministry. And that's what we were planning on doing. But then, just as Bob said, God captured our heart to go someplace else. And as we sang this morning, we wanted to follow the Lord. Now, Pat has been involved in mission work ever since the early 1990s. She was one of the first people that went into Russia back in 1992, and she was involved in the beginning of Village Ministries International way back then. And she went on lots of mission trips and led teams to Africa. And she did that while I was sitting at home pastoring. And I was very fine with that. But then I started to go to Africa, and I went to Kenya first, and then went to Zambia, and then went to Nigeria, then went to Ghana. But then we went to Liberia about 5 years ago. I remember it was Herman Maddox up in Dallas. He went with us, and we left Pat in Ghana because I felt that Liberia was too dangerous. Now, here is somebody that's been to Vietnam, who's been shot at in Liberia, in Nigeria, who has been here and there and every place else. And I felt it was too dangerous for her to go. And so I left her in Ghana, and we went over to Liberia. And I found this fascinating country there that had been an American colony, the only one we ever had. And something about Liberia just got into my soul. And so I went back and I told Pat, I said, we got to go there together. And so the following year, we went there together. And I just kind of stood back and waited to see what God was going to do with her. And God did the same thing with her he had done with me. And he put it into her soul to go there. And so we came back. And it was about 4 years ago that we went in front of our church and told them that that was going to be our last year of pastoring and that we were going to be commissionaries in Liberia, West Africa. Well, some people thought I was crazy. Some people wrote me and they said, are you sure that, you know, you're not having a mental breakdown or something? You know, I mean, after all, you got a great church, a great home, a great congregation and everything else. And I said, but this is where God wants us to go. And so in obedience to the leading of the Spirit, we made plans to go. The only thing we didn't concern ourselves with was who we're going to go with or what we're going to do once we get there. We knew he wanted us to go there and to teach the Word of God and to evangelize because we saw that that was so greatly needed there in that country. And so we went there, and we went there without any association except for our own. Oh, we lost it somewhere along the line. Where is it? Except with our own mission organization, which is Grace Gospel Missions, which really is just me and Pat. That's it. You know, it's not some big organization. But we went there, and we just told people that we met there that we believed that God wanted us there. And so after we were there for a period of time, an organization called SIM, which many of you probably know as Sudan Interior Missions, founded in 1893. Many of the great British and Scottish evangelists were involved in beginning that organization. It has grown so much now that it became SIM, Serving in Missions. They're very active there, having the second largest mission compound in the world there in Liberia, with a hospital, with a school, with a radio station, on and everything else at a place called ELWA, which is the call letters of the radio station. We were there with them, and we were ministering some with them, and finally I think they decided we weren't going to leave, so they better hire us. And so they actually made us associate missionaries with SIM, and so we now have that distinction, and that opened up unbelievable doors for us. And so we get to work with SIM there in Liberia, West Africa. Now, what is it about Liberia that makes Liberia so different? Well, you know, in Africa, there were about 40 countries that were British colonies, about 40 countries that were French colonies, and then there was a handful of Belgian colonies, German colonies, and Dutch colonies, and other places like that. But Liberia, that little country that is up there, if you see it, right up there at the edge of Africa, about the size of Kentucky, about the size of the state of Kentucky, pretty small, with a population of only about 3.5 million. Austin probably has that many, don't they? You know, I know Houston does for sure. But small population. It was the only colony that was ever started by the United States of America. You know, we weren't a colonial power. Every now and then I hear people talk about American aggression in the rest of the world and how we are trying to impose ourselves upon other people. And I think, look at the British and the French. You know, we didn't do anything like that. We had one colony. In the whole history of our country, we had one colony, and it was Liberia. And why was it started? Well, it was started basically back in 1821 as a place where any of the freed slaves or descendants of slaves could go back to Africa. And they took advantage of that because they wanted to take the gospel of Jesus Christ back to that dark continent that was dark not because of the color of the skins of the people's skin, but dark because of the lack of knowledge of Jesus Christ. And so many of the people that went back to evangelize. And they were, many of them were Baptists, Southern Baptists. So they had a good gospel. They knew how to share Christ, and they wanted to bring Christ to the continent of Africa, their continent. And so these freed slaves, they started going over there. From 1821 to 1848, it was our only colony that we had ever established. But then in 1848, because we were not a colonial power and because the United States never saw themselves as a colonial nation, as a colonizing people, we gave them their independence. So in 1848, 120 years before England ever gave any of their colonies freedom and independence, they became an independent nation, and as a result, they prospered, and they prospered, and they prospered. They have iron ore, they have gold, they have diamonds, they have rubber. You ever hear of Firestone? You ever hear of that company? That company planted 1 million acres of rubber trees in Liberia, which are still going, and now they have another 2 million acres of rubber. And so they really prospered all the way up through the end of the 1800s, the beginning of the 1900s, on and on. They just became a tremendously prosperous nation. Back in the 1950s, they actually had the second highest gross national product of any country in the world. And whenever I say that, people say, oh yeah, second to the United States. No, second to Japan. The United States was number three back in the 50s. And so they became this prosperous country, and it became Africa's first and only democratic republic way back in 1848. But then in 1979, there was a military coup. You know, there's always going to be people that will be unsatisfied with what is going on. And there was a man by the name of Sam Rideau who was 23 years old. He was an army sergeant. He had an eighth grade education. He became the president of the country. This very complex, this very wealthy country. And over the next 10 years as the dictator of the country, he ran it into the ground. Well, it completely lost all of its wealth. It's lost its prosperity, tremendous inflation, on and on and on. And that, of course, got people mad, like a guy by the name of Charles Taylor, who many of you might have heard about in the news in the past couple of years, who was found guilty of war crimes. If you saw the movie Blood Diamonds, the whole thing of blood diamonds and what went on in the next door country, Sierra Leone, was all because of him. He was trading diamonds for weapons, and finally he was found guilty of that and sentenced to life in prison. But he started a civil war in 1989, and that's when all the child soldiers were brought in on both sides, and there was tremendous fighting. And the fighting, everybody thought it was only going to last for about a year or so, and then there'd be peace, but then it lasted for 13 years. 13 years of civil war in the country, and completely destroyed it, physically destroyed it. No electrical power throughout the whole country, no water system. Roads were torn up. Airports were destroyed. Buses, vehicles were destroyed. There was nothing. But finally, the war ended in 2003. And then in 2005, they elected their first woman president, the first woman president elected in any of Africa, the first black woman president or head of state elected any place in the whole world. And her name is Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, and she brought peace to the country. And along with, of course, a tremendously large UN presence, there is peace. And there's been peace since 2005, and the country is slowly beginning to rebuild. And that's what we are a part of. But the country still faces so many tremendous challenges. There are challenges of poverty and disease. That's something that is rampant throughout the country. There's the average wage is only a dollar a day. There's very little electricity. Now there's electricity like in the downtown area. And, of course, a lot of people have generators. Very little clean water. Malaria, typhus, HIV are rampant. Extremely poor medical care. Even though we have a hospital there at ELWA, the x-ray machine has been broken for about the last year. And so if you wanted to get an x-ray, you couldn't get one there. Pat was down at the biggest hospital in the country, John F. Kennedy Memorial Hospital. She asked to see their cardiac unit, and they kind of laughed. They said, "We don't have one." And she said, "Well, what do you do if somebody has a heart attack?" They say, "They die." And so that's it. And so that's one thing we have to do. We have to carry evacuation insurance all the time on us to be able to, in case anything does happen. But poor medical care, broken education system, which Pat talked to you about because she works in that area. And then also female genital mutilation, still rampant in the country, even though it's against the law. It still goes on, along with witchcraft. And a lot of people, a lot of believers fall into that, thinking that these witches, these medicine men, these Zoes, can actually vex them and witch them. And there's a fear of that, which we try to tell people, greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. And then, of course, Islam. Islam is something that's a threat throughout the whole world. And especially in West Africa, many of the West African countries around us, like Sierra Leone and Guinea and Cote d'Ivoire, they have about a 70% Islamic population. In Liberia, we only have 15%. And they are not radical. As a matter of fact, we have a lot of people witnessing to them. We have missionaries now with SIM that are upcountry in these areas that are strongly Muslim. And they're going into those areas, and they're witnessing, and they're seeing Muslims come to know Jesus Christ as their Savior. And we even know some pastors who were raised Muslim became Christians and are now telling their own people, telling other Muslims about Jesus Christ. And so we're seeing a tremendous influence there. But, you know, even with all that, even after 13 years of civil war, 10 years of dictatorship, a destroyed economy, a destroyed country, the people still have hope in Jesus Christ. And I'd like to just let Pat share with you a little bit about this verse that we have up there.
We see this so often in all the churches we visit. And Dan will tell you we visit churches every Sunday, sometimes a different one. But we see this posted. And I know, you know, we can apply this, even though it's, you know, to Israel. But, you know, we can apply all scripture. And it says, I'd like you to read it with me. Would you read it with me? It says, it's 2 Chronicles 7:14, and it says, "And my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways. Then I will hear from heaven, will forgive their sin, and will heal their land." And the Liberians really truly believe this verse, and that's what's happening in Liberia. They have been humbled. You know, they have been so humbled. Most of the people we work with are people that stayed in the country, even though many, many people, what's the next one? Okay, a teacher, okay. Many people left the country. 200,000 Liberians came to the United States. The president was here in the United States, and she was educated here and went back to Liberia. A lot of people are coming back, but most of the people that we work with, the majority of the people, are people that stayed during that terrible time. And I'm so glad that Fallon came, because she saw Liberia a few years ago. In the last 3.5 years that we've been there, we have seen tremendous change. It's amazing. And part of the change is I work in teacher training. Our director is British, and his wife is a master teacher from Britain who used to train teachers and principals in Britain. So I work with her. That's one of my things I do. We do teacher training. And we've just seen amazing things happen. In fact, she's doing a principal training as I'm here right now during this last weekend. And but what's interesting is they always give me, we have other missionaries that have different areas of expertise, and they come in and do training. They give me the Bible training, which I love. So every school in Liberia, every school in Liberia has a Bible curriculum. The government decided that they were going to make some public schools, which I don't understand, because no country in Africa has free education. And of all countries, our country, you know, it sounded crazy, but she started a couple public schools and said, well, since they're public schools and all different religions go there, like Muslims and Christians, maybe we should take Bible out of the curriculum. Well, the people just rebelled. No, we have had this in our constitution. I mean, this is part of our heritage. We will have Bible in every school in Liberia. So wherever I go to any school to do any training, whether it's with this teacher training I do or just go to a school to teach something, every school has Bible. So part of my job with the teacher training is to train them to teach children and their students Bible in their school. We train a lot of principals in this Bible training also. But also, I do Sunday school training, which you can see what we do is we train them, and then I give them a certificate. They love getting something, saying, I finished this. And education right now, everybody wants to be educated. Everybody wants to learn Bible. Everybody is just so open. It is just the most open country that you can even imagine right now. And so and a lot of missionaries are coming. We were some of the first missionaries. In fact, last summer, there were just a few of us. And now we've added like 4 medical doctors. We've added just a lot of people. In this slide right here, I want you to see on the left-hand side, the helicopter. That helicopter is owned and operated by Samaritan's Purse. We have Samaritan's Purse is very big on our campus. Elwha campus has 123 acres. It's a missionary compound that has been going since the 1800s. 1953. Oh, SIM, okay. I get confused here. Anyway, so that campus, we all live on this campus together. Well, Samaritan's Purse has a huge compound there. And they do a lot of country work up country. And they have invited us to go up country. And it's been so exciting to get in a helicopter and, you know, go up country and look over the country. And then they drop us into villages where you can't get to the village except by a helicopter because the roads are so bad. And we've gotten so many chances to work with Samaritan's Purse. And then we're there all day. And I teach Sunday school training. And Dan teaches the Bible. And it's really a kind of a thrilling thing to get out of the city and get up country every once in a while. And that's the only way we do it is with Samaritan's Purse. We drive once in a while, but it's very, very hard. And the roads are terrible there. Another thing is discipleship training. This is a new program. We've wanted so much for so many years, the years we've been there, to get a discipleship program going right on the campus. We have a hospital, we have a school, we have a radio station, and we have this huge Samaritan's Purse, a few other mission organizations, us. SIM owns the whole compound. And when we came 3.5 years ago, God gave us an amazing, wonderful, spirit-led director. And it's like he came at the same time. Now, is that a coincidence? Who opened up the whole compound to us as the spiritual advisors, the spiritual people on the campus to do whatever we wanted spiritually. And they asked us, please try to help some of these people who really need to be discipled. They need to be discipled. They can't go disciple unless they know themselves they're a disciple. So we started just recently this discipleship program. It's kind of just amazing. I just had this SALT program. Somebody gave it to me, and I took it to read over it, and all of a sudden one of my Liberian pastors took it and he said, oh my goodness, this would be great for Liberia. I thought it was kind of simple. I mean, it's like, boy, this is really basic. But he just loved it, and it has a lot of diagrams in it, and they're very visual. And especially up country, many people are still illiterate. They can't read. And so he just loved this discipleship program, and so we went with it. And I taught the first one, which was spiritual. And the reason I taught that is I wanted to make sure before they went through all the other sections, and I have people doing all of these, Liberians and Americans. Dan and I will be doing the marital one on marriage. We figure after 43 years of marriage, we might, you know, have something to say there. Anyway, I did the first one. And I tell you, what's so amazing about it is so many things that your pastor taught this morning that we have, like we take for granted, you know, we're new creatures in Christ. And so many things he said, I was sitting there and this talked about, you know, the old sin nature, walking the spirit, the flesh. I mean, it had all these basic things. And I saw these people. And when I looked at their faces, I realized that's what I looked like 45 years ago when I heard these things. I mean, they were just like, wow, we've never heard these things before. So as far as what's happening in Liberia, especially on our campus, this is this discipleship program. These are the people you saw up there with the books. Those people are all people that work in the hospital, nurses, doctors, people at the lab, everybody. We have about 50 in that class that come. Our compound pays for them to come. They come. And our director says, I want them to come during work time. They need to take time off because they need to be discipled. And so it's a great program that just started. Printing, that is the discipleship class over there with all these books. And it's amazing because this has become probably much of our support that we use right now is going towards printing. Printing and Bibles. We found a company over there run by Mennonites that's a ministry that we can print things very inexpensively. So we called America and asked them if we could print those books. There's 7 different books for this discipleship program. And they, of course, we came and we talked to the director here in the United States, and he said, oh, it's too expensive to send that many. We want thousands. I mean, we want how many people in Liberia? 1.5 million, you know, so many million. Yeah, we want 3.5 million of these. Because when you start something like this, everybody wants to do it. Okay, like we started this in the hospital. Now this pastor who is with me told our 100 pastors. We have, SIM has 100 pastors. And that's just SIM. That's not all the Baptists and all the other people. So, you know, when they see this program, they all want it for their church. So it becomes very expensive in printing. But we have a company now there that prints these books for like $1.75 a book. They bind them and everything. And so we're just so blessed to find this company. You know, now we can do a lot of printing. We also have Bibles, and we actually have a Bible fund, and we always have Bibles. And anybody that wants a Bible, they say, oh, you go to the Hills House. They have Bibles. So we give away hundreds of Bibles. And it's so thrilling to see somebody get a Bible and how excited they get about that. But that's, I think that young man in the bottom, that was his first Bible that he ever had. He works at the garden. What's this over here? That's my class. Oh, yeah. Dan had a class at the seminary. We also bought books. We buy books out of our printing fund. We buy books for all the people, and this is a graduate program, and he was teaching on marriage, and he wanted them to have the materials. So if we ever want the Liberians to have materials, we really have to do that. And so we're just so excited about the printing and the Bible ministry that we have there. And this was an answer to prayer. The youth there is what they call anywhere from 13, you may remember this, Fallon, 13 to 30. If you're not married, you're a youth. And it just always has bothered Dan and I that you have 13-year-olds. They have no classes, by the way, for youth. All right. At this point, they just barely have classes for young children. But all those youth, 13, 14 up, they're all in church. And then when they have something for youth, there is no separation. So I decided we're going to have a camp, and you have to be at least 16 to come, 16 and up. I wanted 18, but they said, oh, no, we have to get some of those 16-year-olds. And I've been praying for years for a camp ever since we got there, because I see that as being the next generation of people in Liberia, and we're just dealing with the adults. But I see these young people in their 20s. There's so many of them. We go to church, and you know the majority of the church are 20 to 30. The majority. And yet nothing's being done for them. So I started off with a camp, and this is our first youth camp, and it's on our compound. We have a little campground there. We had to limit it to 100 people because we had no more room. So we had 100 youth come, and we brought this group from Alabama. They do camps. It's a doctrinal couple that do camps in Alabama, and they asked to come, and they brought some college students, and you can see how much fun these kids are having, and that's them on the beach. We also have an American who sent us T-shirts for them. It's their first T-shirt they ever got with Eco Churches on it. And so it was a great camp because Americans brought a lot of fun songs, you know, with actions. And they brought discipleship program to start discipling. And so now we did a follow-up, and they said, oh, this was so wonderful. Could you and Dan, meet with us every 3 months to help us form our youth ministry? So we work now with the leaders of the 100 churches. We work with the youth leaders. And that's an area, if you could pray for us, that's an area that we need a couple to take. I mean, we're old, you know? And yet they think it's wonderful. They listen to us. We help them. Before they used to, if they ever have anything, they kind of like go and beg money from people. And I taught them how to do fundraisers. So you don't have to beg money. You need to make money. And so we did like, you know, movies for the kids. And we did a garage sale. They've never heard of that, where you take everybody. So they went to all the missionaries and we all gave things. And they made, you know, they made all the money for this camp. It was not given to them by other people. So I was real excited. Anyway, that's a wonderful ministry that we're just praying that somebody, God will send somebody to take that ministry of that 100 churches with those youth because they need the Word of God. There you go. And now, oh yeah, I teach at Monrovia Bible College. I'm first. This is kind of a new presentation, so we're not real familiar with all the slides. We changed all of our slides. This is Monrovia Bible College, and the little Plava Hut you see right here, that's the student union, okay? That's where they all meet and have their little, you know, oranges and things like that. I teach English, and I've taught there for 3 years, and the reason we teach there, it's right across the street from our compound, no electricity, there is a generator if you need electricity. You have to go buy your own gas for the generator, but, you know, there is a generator, but there's no electricity, no running water, no flush toilets, anything like that. So it's a Bible college, and it's got a great history of wonderful people we've met that graduated from there even before the war. So we work there, and our director is also works there, Jenny, SIM. And what happens is we can't get paid as missionaries. We don't take money as missionaries. So they give us a scholarship. Now, everybody in Liberia needs money to go to school, and it's not cheap. It's not inexpensive. And they work, and they work, and they save. Our pastor has never had an education, and so we started 2 years ago with him, and we asked if he wanted to go to college, and he's just like, wow, yes. So we support our pastor, and he goes to the Bible college, and we have a couple teachers we support. One pastor we supported was a converted Muslim, and he recently died. That's one thing we have a hard time in Liberia. People die all the time of simple things, you know, hepatitis, diabetes, things that can't be helped there. And so we've gotten used to hearing. I mean, I never want to get cold about it, but you know, every week, 2 weeks, you hear of somebody you know dying. Children, it does. There's no, you know, people die all the time. And we had this man on a scholarship, and so we were able to give another person the scholarship. But he was an eco pastor, converted Muslim, and he saw a lot of people, including right before he died, he told us that his father was actually asking him if he could have a Bible because he wanted to compare the Bible with the Quran. So we pray for that man. Anyway, Dan will tell you about his teaching at Monrovia Bible College.
Thank you, Pat. I get to teach theology and Bible at Monrovia Bible College. And it was interesting because the first class I ever taught was New Testament Survey, and it was a required class, and I had to teach it to everybody. I had 70 students in the classroom, and they were from business, and they were nurses, and they were education majors, and then a few Bible majors and theology majors. And I didn't really like that because they didn't want to be there, and they kind of had to take the class. And so I'll never forget that I gave them their first test. I gave them a quiz. And so I handed out the quiz and everything else, and I turned around and went back to the front of the class, and all of a sudden I saw the students doing this. And I said, "Well, what are you doing? You're cheating." And they said, "Oh, no, Dad, we're not cheating. We're just helping each other." And so they had decided to call cheating helping, and it was okay. And I couldn't help but think of how often we do that. And that is why 1 John 1:9 is bracketed by if you deny. Because what do? We deny. And how do we deny sometimes? Just call sin something else. I'm not stealing it. I'm just borrowing it. You weren't using it, so I'll just take it. And that happens over there a lot too. We have to kind of keep everything under lock and key. We're guarded at our house by 24-hour security, 24-hour guards out in front of the house all the time. But it was interesting. But I went to them and I said, "Oh no, I just want to teach theology and Bible." So now they have me teaching Romans in the fall and either pastoral or general epistles in the spring. And I get to teach just usually about the junior, senior theology students. And it's a great opportunity. As Pat says, we get to have these scholarships that we get to give to other people to be able to go to school. And then this past year at Liberia Baptist Seminary, they decided to start a Master's of Divinity program. And so they came to me and asked if I would teach in it. And I've already done critical introduction to the New Testament, which kind of stretched me a little bit. It's been a long time since I dealt with all the manuscripts and the manuscript arguments and textual criticism, lower criticism, higher criticism, and all that. But I had to spend some time studying and preparing for that. We had a great time. And then also I then taught a class on marriage and family. But that's our students there. These are probably 20 of the sharpest people in Liberia I have ever been with. I mean, these men were great. Every one of them were a college graduate from somewhere in West Africa. And they were just amazing. Most of them were pastoring or working full-time and pastoring and then coming to school at night. And they were amazing. We actually had three young men who were officers in the Liberian Armed Forces. And they were also chaplains. And they kind of do both infantry duty and chaplaincy duty at the same time. And so they were coming every night. And it was great to have them. So it was really a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. So be praying about that program. It's still kind of trying to find its own way. But God is giving these men a great opportunity to be able to get some good at graduate level training. Now, also, you'll see that's a fire. And you'll see below it there's a construction site. And they're kind of connected in a way because when I first got there, the name ELWA, E-L-W-A, actually is the call letters of the radio station that the government gave to the radio station was founded when it was started in 1953. And about 2 years after that, the missionaries that were there with SIM, they said, "Well, let's see if we can make ELWA mean something." So they had a contest, and they finally came out with Eternal Love Wins Africa. And so that's what ELWA now stands for, Eternal Love Wins Africa. The second choice didn't make it. That was Every Lady Wants Attention. I thought that was kind of a good one, but they said, no, that one wouldn't work. So as a result of the radio station becoming known as ELWA, everything at the compound, the hospital, the school, and everything has become part of ELWA. Well, I was on the radio a little bit when I first got there, and then they started talking about giving me a radio program, and I said, that'd be great. But then the radio station burned down. It was an act of political terrorism, actually, because during the election that they had there in 2012, there was we wouldn't take sides in the election. We wouldn't take either the side of the one party or the other party. So we don't know which party burned down the radio station, but one of them did. They didn't like the fact that we wouldn't support them. And so I remember I was one of the first people on the scene, and I walked up. A woman called me and said, "The radio station there's a fire at the radio station." I thought it might be a grass fire or something like that. And I hopped in my Jeep and ran around the corner to it. And all of a sudden I looked, I came up to it, and this whole building was just engulfed in flame. And it just burned all through the night because, of course, there's no real fire service or anything else there. But what they didn't know is that two things. One, that radio station was not where the transmitter was. The transmitter was on up the road about maybe a quarter of a mile. They also didn't know that we had already been given the funding to begin building a brand new radio station. So by 9 o'clock the next morning, we were back on the air. And everybody was asking us, oh, how did you get back on the air so quickly? And we told them, I says, well, we're broadcasting. They said, from where? I said, a secret underground location. But shortly after that, they gave me a radio program. And I've often told people, I'm getting a chance to do things in Liberia that I never had a chance to do here in the United States. And one is be on the radio, and I just stand back and I thank God for it. It's almost a highlight of my week, and I'm just always thanking God for this opportunity. I'm teaching the Gospel of Mark, and I'm teaching it much like the Mark series in Grace Notes. I'm going through almost the same material that I provided for them. And so we're doing it verse by verse every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9, and then we have call-in, too, and we're looking at starting an evening program, too, which might be a little bit more interactive with a few more calls. And so that's just so much fun to be able to do that, to be able to teach at the seminary, to be able to teach at Bible colleges. I just wake up almost every morning and just thank God for all the opportunities that he's giving us. Because as Pat said, we're kind of old. We're supposed to be living on a beach someplace, retired. You know, but then you think, wait a minute, we do live on a beach, but we're not retired. You know, we stay really, really busy. And that's the new radio station that's under construction. And it's about halfway done at this point. And we're hoping within another year we'll have this beautiful new radio station constructed. And it's also going to include expansion area for television, because that we feel that's going to come about one of these days. I don't know if they'll want to put me on television or not, but, you know, I'll continue with the radio. We also have an opportunity to minister to pastors and churches. Pat mentioned the ECHO, which stands for Evangelical Churches of Liberia, and those are about 100 churches that were started by SIM over the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. And we get, I'm actually officially the spiritual advisor to them, and so I meet with the pastors and I get to speak in their churches, plus other churches, and we get to hold conferences. And almost every Sunday we're at some other church, being able to teach. And Pat teaches the children and teaches how to teach Sunday school. And so we have a real opportunity there with the churches. Plus, in our home, usually about once a month, we invite the pastors and their wives to come to our home for dinner and Bible study. And that's something that's kind of new to them. The first time we asked the pastors, we said, well, we want to have you come and we want to invite you to bring your wives to be invited. It was like, why? Why would you want our wives to come? Well, they're part of the ministry too. They are? Yeah, they are. And so we have but what's interesting is that as we talk about things now, the wives are more verbal than the guys. They're the ones that are asking the questions and making the comments. And every now and then you see some of the husbands kind of give it, you know, what? That came out of you? You know? So it's really fun to see. But we have a wonderful ministry with them. And then also we do Bible and leadership conferences. And this is something, again, that just kind of blows me away that God's giving us this opportunity. We are asked by other groups like a Samaritan's Purse to be one of their conference speakers. And so we've done like two conferences, major conferences with their whole staff. And we're very good friends with the director of Samaritan's Purse. And then SIM had us involved in their spiritual life conference that they have every year. We were able to do a bit there. And then we've gone up country and did with one of the Bible colleges, and they asked me to come up and do the baccalaureate service and then do some Bible classes after that. And then Pat does women groups and girls groups. And so there's all kinds of opportunities for teaching in different conferences that we get invited to do. And again, God just has opened up a tremendous opportunity for us there. And then also in the area of marriage counseling and seminars. And this is something that Pat and I just started to think about, that marriages in Liberia were really broken through the war. Many people were separated from their husbands and wives. And for years, some of them did not know if their husbands and wives were even alive. And so in many cases, they found out that they weren't. And so their marriages have really been broken. And families are broken. And so we decided to start doing marriage and family seminars. And we do those in churches on a Saturday, just a whole day. And we've been able to do that, as well as doing some marriage counseling. And that's something else that pastors weren't doing. They were not doing any pre-marriage counseling. And so we've been training our pastors to do that. And that's the first couple that we did marriage counseling with, Andrew and Favor. And they still are very involved in our ministry, and we're very involved with theirs. And so they get to they were the first recipients of the marriage counseling that we did.
Oh, what's interesting is what people don't understand is, you know, I mean, we've been in doctrine since I was 19, and that was a lot of years ago. 43 years, I've always been in a local church, exercising my spiritual gift. And then you go off to a foreign country, and there is nothing. You know, you have to be self-sustaining. And we found out that one way Dan can really feed meat is to have an expat. And these are missionaries. So these are missionaries that come in the corner there. That's an older picture. We have different people now. But these missionaries come to get food, spiritual food, because everything we get is on tape, and that's okay, DVDs, that's great. But there's nothing like face-to-face teaching. And that if it, you know, people have always asked me, what do you miss the most about America? And I tell them, it's face-to-face teaching. This morning was wonderful. It was like, oh, do you have to stop? it's hard to even imagine for you all what it's like to, you know, be in a local church and ministering in a local church, and all of a sudden there's nothing for you except God is using you. And so this is like a wonderful time that Dan can get in the Word and really teach these people from all over the world. We have Lebanese Christians that were, of course, run out of Lebanon, you know, back in the day when the Muslims moved in and that country. So Liberia has lots of Lebanese, and they go to they're Christian Orthodox. So when this couple first came to our class, we weren't sure if they were even believers. But we now know for sure they're believers, and they're studying the Bible with us. The others, we know we're all believers because they're all like missionaries, but they're from all different churches, all different sections, but we're teaching the Word of God, and Dan's the teacher. And I think with Dan, it's so amazing because he's got, we have how many, 250 on the campus? Dan is the spiritual leader, or you could call him a chaplain, for 250 employees we have on the compound. And so he's like, when anybody has a problem, they come to him, because even though we have quite a few missionaries now and they're coming and coming, they all come for a specific thing to do. You know, like working, we have IT people. The country is rebuilding, so we have a lot of missionaries that come with their expertise. You know, doctors, nurses, people that come and give back to give construction. We have so many missionaries that come for all those things. We are the only missionaries on that campus that came strictly to evangelize and teach the Bible. So our whole day is filled. Our whole lives are filled. And it's amazing that God has given us all this energy that we never had here. I mean, just to get through a week was to do these things. And we know that it's only because there's, like Pastor Bob was saying this morning, we all have a plan and it's not done yet. And it's like God has a plan for us in Liberia. And it's short. I mean, we're on our last lap here, okay? So on this last lap that we're running, he says we've got to get it all in. And we have seen amazing things, especially with that expat class. And also the girl that we had our arm around, she's a Samaritan's Purse. Samaritan's Purse has a lot of young people that come over. And this is an American girl from Wyoming. And it's amazing because we are just humbled by the fact that there's young people this age, single people, young people that have devoted their lives to the mission field. And this girl came right about 3.5 years ago when we came. And we just connected and we became her parents. We're parents to a lot of the young missionaries there. And so we became so close. And she met her right man through Samaritan's Purse. And now she's a missionary in Sudan, where he's the director of the country for SIM. So it's amazing to see these young people and be part of their lives.
You know, we've talked a lot about the work we do, and it does keep us busy. And it is at times hard work. And, of course, we're doing it, you know, in the power of the Word and the power of the Spirit. But there's also a lot of fun things. Like, have you ever had somebody come to your door and try to sell you a baboon? I remember this day because this guy knocked on the door and he says, oh, my man, I got to sell my baboon because I want to send my kids to school. And so I yelled out, hey, Pat, come see what I'm buying. Pat came out and said, no way. So I just gave the guy some dollars and had my picture taken with him. But he was really cute. I really wish I could have kept him. But anyway, but we do have things like that happening. We actually have this one guy who dresses his baboon in a little suit and he rides on the back of his motorcycle. It's kind of cool. But we have beautiful sunsets. That's looking right out the front of our house. We have these gorgeous, gorgeous sunsets. And, of course, we get to go right out our backyard. Whoops, one too many. We get to go right out our backyard and we get to pick bananas. I mean, That's literally like 15 feet out our back door. We got these beautiful, wonderful bananas. And then, of course, what would Africa be like unless we got to tame a wild animal? Fallon, does that guy look familiar?
Yeah.
Fallon saved that little guy's life, and he's now a big cat. As a matter of fact, people see him and say, that's the fattest cat I've ever seen in all Liberia. But his name is Nell. And he does a good job of keeping the rats and the mice away. And so he does his job. And we kind of fell in love with him, believe it or not. But he's a really great little cat. Now, we also have some people that we were really close to there. And the one young man you see, his name is Nelson. And he's kind of like a throwaway kid. His parents threw him away. He got through the years of the war. A lot of people tell us that they used to take the bark off the trees and boil it to make it soft so they could eat it, because they had to put something in their stomach, and they would also boil grass. And sometimes the water that they would do that in wasn't too clean, so it was good that they would boil it. But he kind of lived on the streets and was helped out here and there. He almost became a child soldier at one time, but fortunately he was able to escape that plight. And when we met him, he was about 22, and he was in like the eighth grade. And that's not unusual over there for kids to be going to school at that age. And so we kind of took him in, and we basically kind of like adopted him unofficially. And we call him our son, and he's going to school now. And he's 25. He's in the 11th grade. And so pray for Nelson. He's got a lot to learn. Just to tell you one little story, he and I were driving one time, and he asked me, he said, Dad, he said, I understand that in America you have machines that wash dishes. And I went, yeah, we do. And he says, well, what is it? Is it a robot that stands at the sink and does the dishes like this? I mean, that's the only thing he could think of. So I had to explain to him, no, it's a box, and it's got water in it and racks in it and everything else. But it's just really fun to spend time with him. And then this is our other family who also live at our home. We have a couple rooms in the back of our house, and they occupy that area. But I'll let you, Pat, tell about them.
Yeah, we board our son at CEF. There's an orphanage there and a school and a huge boys' school. And so we board him there because we felt like he needed more help. They give a lot more help than we could give because we're so busy. But we do, this young lady and her three girls, her husband was our first real friend that we met in Liberia. He was a pastor, and we just fell in love with him. He taught Bible at the school. He had a Baptist church. We became very close to him. And two summers ago, he died of hepatitis. By the time an American doctor came and diagnosed it, it was too late. So he died leaving this widow and three children. And so we have the three orphans. And so we've adopted them, this whole family. So now we have a son and three grandchildren and a daughter. An instant family here. You know, in Liberia, it's like in the world, you can't help everybody, but God always leads you to the ones he wants you to help. And these are the people God led to us. It was amazing how it all worked out. And so this is our family. We love them. They're just amazing. Of course, there's the little one, Ednella. She remembers her father because she's like five now. And she remembers she was affected most by the death of the father. The little girl, she was just a few months old. So, you know, she doesn't remember at all. The older child remembers him quite well. So, oh, and the little picture, this is the little one going to school for the first day. I had to get a picture of her. She's 3 years old. They start them at 2.5 and 3 years old at what's nursery school. And then they go, they have pre-kindergarten, they have three classes before you get to kindergarten. That's the way it is in Liberia. Everybody wants to be in school. And so this was her first day of school, and she was so proud, and she had her little, and then she comes home like this. And I said, what's wrong? She said, I got in trouble. I said, you got in trouble the first day of school? She said, yes, because my hair's not plaited. She had this hairdo she really liked, but in kindergarten there, I guess in nursery, you have to have your hair plaited a certain way. And so they told her, don't you come back to school looking that way. So bless her heart. Anyway, she loves school, and that's our family. We love these people, and it's amazing to see what God's doing in their lives also. And Queen, her name's Quinella, has just started college. Somebody from the U.S., knew her husband and gave her money to go to college. So for the first time, she's 29 years old, she gets to go to school. And so she goes to school. SIM hired her to work in our guest house. And so she lives there on campus. We're helping her build a little apartment for her family. And so she's truly our daughter, and she helps me. Oh, my goodness. She cleans my house. She irons my clothes. She does everything for me. She rubs my feet when they're sore. You know, I mean, it's amazing. She's a wonderful daughter.
These are just a few of the things we'd like you to be praying about with us. And you'll see the Liberian flag. It looks a little familiar, doesn't it? Yeah, that's the American flag. It's the only other country in the world that I know of that actually gives a pledge of allegiance to the flag. I know we do that, but others give pledge of allegiance to the king or the queen or something like that. But they actually stand in every school, 8 o'clock in the morning, the flag is raised, and all the students are outside. If it's not raining, they're outside with their hand over their heart saying the pledge. They actually go like this. They're saying their pledge to the flag, something that we don't even do here every day in our schools. But they use the American dollar for their currency, and so that's kind of nice. And they're also one of only three countries in the world that does not use the metric system. They use inches and yards and miles and gallons, just like we're used to. So they're very, very Americanized. And they, of course, speak English. They have their 16 tribal dialects that they speak, but most everybody speaks English, except they speak Liberian English. And Liberian English is a little bit cut off there. They don't pronounce every word. They just can't pronounce half of every word. And that's the way to talk. If you want to say, take me to the airport, take me to the airport. So they do that. And if it's not side, it's other side. And Pat and I even got into it. It's not like if I say to her, what'd you say? She says, I said. I said. But anyway, our health and safety, of course, that's a big concern in a country like that. Really pray for that. Basic Bible training for the ELWAS staff, biblical training, the discipleship work we're doing there. Bible Institute for the young adults. I've wanted to start a Bible Institute ever since I've got there. And this has kind of been one of those things where we make our plans and God orders our steps. I wanted to teach pastors the Bible, and I thought to do it in a Bible Institute. And then God says, no, I'm going to have you at Monrovia Bible College and at the Baptist Seminary teaching pastors. But now we have a lot of young people, young adults, these youth that are in their 20s that have come to us, and they said, we want more Bible training. And so we'll probably be putting together a Bible Institute for them when we come back. And then also the print ministry and Bible ministry that is really something new and kind of expanding. The Masters of Divinity program at the Baptist Seminary. The new ELWA Hospital. The first year we were there, Franklin Graham came and held a crusade, and it was great. We were able to work as a part of it. We were able to be involved with it. And he saw a hospital there at ELWA, and he said, you need a new hospital. Here's $4 million. Samaritan's Purse has so much money. But he gave us the money there. It's under construction now, and we hopefully will be finished in a year. And it's going to be an 80-bed hospital with emergency room, with dental clinic, with all kinds of things. And so it's going to be an 80-bed hospital. And so that's something that we're looking forward to. And that's why we're doing so much training, and that's why we're getting the new doctors there. And then also evening Bible teaching radio program that I'm looking forward to beginning. And then we also need missionaries. We still need missionaries at SIM. We're looking for somebody to deal in the area of radio programming. And that does not have to be a radio person. Really, it could be more of a communications person. And so if you know of anybody that's interested in that, and then an IT person. We really need an IT person as a missionary there. One thing both Pat and I have learned being on the mission field in the past 3.5 years is that missionaries come in all shapes and sizes. Sometimes they're there to evangelize and teach the Bible, such as we are. But others are there as doctors, as nurses, as people in construction, as dentists, as dental hygienists, as teachers, and all these other areas, and even IT and things like that we can really use.
And those people all that come, they're all missionaries, and they do evangelize. I mean, they have their areas. It's just they spend most of their time in something else. We don't. Fallon is probably the only one here that'll understand what I'm going to say next. And that's when she came and when we first went to Liberia, as you walked around, you just saw these sad faces. I mean, she says, what's wrong with these people? And then we told her about the war, and she says, whoa. Because most of the people, I mean, walked over dead bodies. Our son ate grass to stay alive. Saw people dead as they were going around. So, yeah, it was traumatic. And when you came, you saw these sad faces. And, you know, that's what drew me to Liberia. I just went there and I thought, I mean, I've been to a lot of countries in the world, but I have never seen such a broken people, such a sad, you know, heartbreaking thing. And you see the sad face, and yet they wanted Christ and they wanted the word, and they're positive. It wasn't, but they weren't experiencing the joy of Christ because they had all this garbage. And so that's what drew me there. And as we've been there, it's been so amazing, because now you go to Liberia, if you come back, Fallon, you will see smiles, and you will see people walking along. They don't grab a hold of their children afraid somebody's going to take them. It is a country that is just, as 3.5 years of being there, from the beginning to now, we're seeing amazing things in Liberia. And whether it's going to be a client nation to the world, I don't know. But I've never been anywhere where I've seen such positive people as a nation as Liberia. And so we love the Liberians. I mean, I just love them. I can't tell you why or how, but I love them so much. What saddens me is that I came to America this time more than ever, and we were riding on a bus. We use buses. People say, why? Well, why not? I mean, buses are great here now in the United States. So we were on a bus, and I was sitting next to someone else and watching these people. And you know what? I'm seeing all those sad faces in America. The faces I saw in Liberia, I'm beginning to see them in America. So I was talking to Dan. I said, who knows, Dan, maybe in a few years we're going to be missionaries to America. I don't know. But we need those smiles, and the only way we're going to get them is to be so low, there's only one way to go, and that's up.
Thank you all very much. We have a display out in the foyer. We have some of our brochures. We'd really like you to take them. We have lots of these bookmarks. Take bookmarks. I actually ordered too many. I got way, way too many. And then we also have a sign-up sheet for signing up on our email newsletter. So we went a little bit over, but thank you, Bob, for your patience. He didn't start throwing things at me. I didn't get the hook. So very good. Yeah, we're trying to not be on Liberian time. We'd just be beginning right now if we were on Liberian time.
Sure enough. Well, thank you, Dan and Pat. Appreciate that. Absolutely. Remember to keep them in your prayers and keep our deacons in your prayers. We've made it a goal throughout the remainder of this year to be praying over our mission budget and what next year might be looking at. So make that a feature of your prayers as well.